Welcome to another edition of the Inside Scoop. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm your host and also the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. If you're not familiar with the Inside Scoop, it's a podcast dedicated to helping parents learn about the soccer pathways that would be available to their child if they lived in another city around the world. And this show is brought to you by Anytime Soccer Training. Anytime Soccer Training is the only training program with well over 5,000 training videos that covers all the major individual skill areas. So check out anytime-soccer.com to learn more about the program. And now let's get on with the show. This is going to be a gut reaction to a post that was just made in our Anytime Soccer Training Facebook group and our Youth Soccer Coaching Facebook group, same post. And if you're not a member of the Anytime Soccer Training Facebook group, I encourage you to do so. Join the conversation. But I will link this post in the show notes so you can see what I'm talking about. That's because the post is pretty lengthy, very well thought out, very good suggestions. But he led with something, with a topic that I've tried over the years to add some nuance to. And I want to talk about that today to get food for thought and people's reaction. I always add my qualifiers. I got my coaching license on Facebook. I did my undergrad at YouTube University, and I got my master's of science at on Google. So take what I'm gonna say with a grain of salt. So here we go. So he leads with saying this: the number one problem with all youth sports is prioritizing winning over development. Again, the number one problem with all youth sports is prioritizing winning over development. And then he goes on to say, hey, this is a soccer group, so we're going to talk a little bit more about the soccer thing, soccer specifically. And he offers some points and some things he thinks can improve or recommendations, which I agree with for the most part, to improve the situation. And another point he makes, which I agree, is he says, hey, this is not just a US thing. It's not even just a grassroots thing. At the highest echelons of soccer, at the highest, the most well-known academies, European, around the world, Latin American, the top academies as well, not just the US, this is still a problem. And many of these fully funded academies are able to mitigate the situation by recruiting the best talent, which gives their coaches a lot more latitude to execute their game model, and I'm introducing that word, while still winning. Right? So this is the assessment. And I have gone on to say, and I've talked about this before, I think this framework, dichotomy, model, whatever you want to use, is a little too simplistic to understand what is happening in youth soccer as it relates to the development process, the development environment, and the people in charge of executing them. So I just think this is a little too simplistic. And while I can't offer any concrete solutions, I think the problem is a little too complex, multifaceted for anyone to offer any real, like, definitely do this type of thing. I think part of the solution is being clear-eyed about some of the factors, right? And if you're not clear about those factors, I think it's almost impossible then to tackle the problem effectively, right? And so, in previous shows, what are some of the nuanced points that I try to add to this conversation about winning versus development, which is a very common theme in youth soccer? I'm going to breeze through a few of these because I want this podcast to be relatively short and I want to get people's feedback. Well, the first piece of nuance is this assumes that the coach is competent, and I don't mean that in an insulting way. I mean it more like a legal way. Like they're competent. They know how to develop players, right? We don't have a competency issue. They know how to develop players, but they choose due to their own ego, external pressure from parents, the pay-to-play ecosystem, players, they choose for some reason to focus on winning in the short term at the detriment of development. So I know how to develop players, but I choose winning at the detriment of their development. So the problem with that, number one, is you have to make that assumption. The second assumption you have to make, which is a problem, is there's this basket of things. There's this established basket of things, established basket of activities that you would choose if you were focused on development. A, B, and C. Open up door one and pick out the A, B, and C activities. And then there's another basket of activities that you would choose. Go to door number two and pick out X, Y, and Z if you're prioritizing winning. And it has to, we have to assume that we agree on what those are. And I know that I have been on the receiving end, and I know other coaches have been on the receiving end of picking an activity from one of those baskets and being told that, oh, see, that's evidence that you're focused on winning over development. And I'm not so sure that's necessarily the case. So an example, I'll just give a short example, would be, oh, if you play, I've seen someone say, hey, if you play your most technical players in the midfield, that's an example of you focusing on winning versus development. Where, I've gone on record to say that I think the team that can keep the ball longer and take the ball faster increases the opportunities for everyone to develop. So in these structured games, that is not the time that I focus on upskilling you to be able to play a certain position. So while I do want to put you in positions that make you uncomfortable, put you in positions that stress you, I don't see structured games as necessarily the opportunity to do that. I think the opportunity to upskill you is in the training environment, right? And if I don't think you have the skill to play at any of the various positions, we're going to do a lot of work, a lot of remediation to make sure you're upskilled to do that, right? And I've seen evidence of that working, and I don't know the coach's intentions. In my older son's club, because the kids stay there a long time, it's a unique situation. The club is pretty small. I've seen kids who you wouldn't put them anywhere near the midfield when they first started, get upskilled, and now they can play in the midfield. In my younger son's club, I use him as an example. He is left-footed, but he was very dominantly left-footed. And I work with him, work with him, work with him, work with him. And just his last tournament this weekend, last weekend, excuse me, they play him in the midfield. And I don't know the decision, how that decision came about. I don't know exactly. I don't talk to the coaches in that way. I know what I'm seeing, but I believe that the coach is not necessarily saying, I'm going to do that because I want solely to win without developing. I just think it's just a natural extension, a natural thing to do is say, hey, we need to control the ball. There's things we want to get out of this game, and I got to put people in positions to help us do that. And if someone is not able to do that, I'm not saying they would say that, but this is how I think about it. I'm going to upskill them. We're going to work on it, work on it, work on it. And I'm going to explain to them why they're not in this position or these various positions. And we're going to have a plan to make sure you get there, but I'm not going to throw you in the deep end in the name of playing you in different positions, as I often hear. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I'm just saying that's an example of two reasonable people having a different approach, and one approach is being could be called, hey, you're focusing on prioritizing winning, when that could not necessarily be the person's priority. Another problem with this framework is it paints an ethical lens on the behavior, and when you do that, you back people in a corner, because I can just tell you that most people don't believe that's what they're doing. So when you paint it that way, you force the person to be defensive, and you can't have a real sincere conversation because the person is now defensive. And finally, and there are many reasons why I think this is an oversimplification of the problem, but finally, it assumes that winning and the things you, sorry, I should say another way, it assumes that development and the things you need to do to develop a player in the long term are at odds with them winning in the short term. And I have not seen very much evidence in my personal life. Again, high school athletes, so take that for what it's worth. And I haven't seen much evidence of that in watching all the teams and hundreds of teams in my children's teams. What resonates with me in real life is the team that's developed the best tends to over-index in winning. All other things being equal, meaning you're playing sort of your same age group, roughly your same level, roughly your same experience, that kind of stuff. And we've talked about development as, in my opinion, when you talk about the soccer specific things, it's a process that takes what the player has, teaches them something, trains them in all the key areas of soccer. In this case, process can be replicated, with the result of accelerated improvement in on-field performance as an individual, as a team, and as an individual within the team. And that on-field performance can be measured with some simple objective metrics. You choose the ones that matter to you, that are consistent with your game model, what you're trying to accomplish. And it should be subjective observations along with that. And it should be relatively easy for you to produce some video to show what success looks like. So again, it's a process, takes what the player has, it can be replicated, teaches them something, trains them in all the key areas of soccer with the result of accelerated improvement in on-field performance that can be measured objectively and subjectively. And that on-field performance is looked at as the individual, as the team, and as the individual within the team context. I just happen to believe if you're knocking that out, there will be exceptions because that's just the way it is. But more than likely, you're going to be in a W category than L over time, right? Controlling for everything else, especially if you're playing a team that is not doing that. But this model would have you believe that you can be doing all those things, and when you're doing all those things, you are increasing your chances of losing, but it's going to work out in the long run. I don't know. I don't know about that one. All right. So I say all that to say, and I'm going to wrap this up. Last weekend, my 2013 was at a tournament. And they played four games, and they played four games because they made it to the championship game. And when I go to these tournaments, I try to watch a variety of teams in addition to my own son's team. And I just did the sort of game model podcast before I went down there. So I did have that in mind as sort of what I was going to look at. And if you recall in these previous podcasts, I said, hey, if you had to screen a soccer team and you just wanted to know if you needed to dig a little deeper Or if you ask my opinion on what should you look for, I've always said, hey, I look at, does the team have the ability to connect five passes? Does the team have the ability to connect five passes? Then I look at when receiving the ball, does the players check up? Do the players check up and evaluate their surroundings? And then finally, I look at, are they organized in defense, which is going to be a little bit more subjective, but still, are they organized in defense? That's the kinds of things I look at. That's a simple screener. Doesn't tell you anything in isolation, but it just at least gives you an idea of what might be happening in the training environment. If they're not able to do that, I would want to dig deeper. I want to ask questions. Why aren't they able to do that? And it could be a very reasonable answer. It could be, hey, no, our priorities are this, or hey, I've only had these guys for 2 weeks. You know, there could be very logical explanations, but I would want to understand that. So given that, I think, and my son plays in what they call their pre-academy team. So this is their top team for their age group. They have two pre-academy teams because the club is pretty large, one in the north and one in the south. He plays in the southern one. So this again is considered their top 2013 team. And I'm assuming they're playing against other top 2013 teams. I know some of them were what they call pre-MLS next teams. And excluding one team, I can comfortably say I don't think I saw a single team successfully connect four passes more than two or three times in a game. And I was not able to identify any discernible game model that was being taught. And what I mean by that is, to me, it just looked as if the kids were doing what is most natural to whatever their personality is. So if they were aggressive and they wanted to go forward, that's what they did. If they were the type of kid that would try to find a pass, that's what they did. There was no con they were not moving in concert. Just literally, like, I get the ball and I do whatever I feel, whatever comes natural to me. I defend based on whatever my own personality is. I fight for the ball based on my own level of natural aggression, not a game model in any discernible way. And that's in stark contrast to the team who happened to win. And this story is not saying, oh, see, they won. They have this type of, no, it's just a coincidence they won. Because as a matter of fact, they lost like 8-2 or 10-2 against my son's team in the first game. But, you know, I shared a clip of there with my buddies. In the first 2 minutes, you can immediately see what they're trying to accomplish. It's just clear. I can tell literally what they're trying to accomplish. These kids happen to be really technical, and I don't think you could get that technical with just a team training. So that could speak to a little bit of it. But even still, you could tell exactly what they're trying to accomplish. You could tell they understood where they were on the pitch. You could tell they understood the game situation. They understood, oh, we're down, we need to up the tempo, we're winning, we need to control the ball more. Where, again, I'll use my son's team for that matter. They were winning like some crazy amount to two or something like that, but they were still playing as if they were losing by 3 goals. Just no sense of awareness, no, I just, you know, like I said, it was almost as if, and maybe I'm being overly harsh, but I'm trying to help you guys picture it. If they just play the way that they would naturally play, then based on their own personalities. So why do I say all of that? Because I don't believe that what I saw in those four teams, no, let me say it another way. I don't believe that the difference between what I saw with the one team who had a clear game model and identifiable way that they wanted to play, and were able to connect passes, move in the space, get the ball into space to their attacking players, all the stuff you want to start seeing at that age. I don't think that was happening because their coaches, deep in their heart, focused on development versus winning, and they then decided to choose this basket of things. And I also don't believe that the other coaches, deep in their heart, are like, man, I would be doing this. I know my kids, my defenders have their head down and just boot the ball as far as they can at the mere sight of another player. I know they should take a touch and play the ball back to their keeper, get in space, receive it, or try to switch the field, but I want to win. So I'm just going to allow them to keep their head down and boot the ball as fast as they can and hope something happens. I don't think that's what's going on in their head. And I think practices, if I were to watch both practices, will probably be a little different. Yeah, no, I was going to say I don't even think practices would be that different because it's all about how you execute the details, but more than likely practices would be a little bit different, but it won't be different again because one is focused on development and one is focused on winning, in my opinion. They're just going to be different because of some other reason other than that. I don't know if this is making any sense, but I'm just basically saying, hey, I just think everybody is doing the best. It actually sounds negative, right? I think it sounds negative because you're basically saying people are not competent. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, hey, I think people are doing the best they can with the resources and information they have available to them. And I don't think the results that you see on the field are because somebody has made up in their mind they're focused on winning versus development. I think humans have their own human shortcomings. And so you have some people who tend to be overly focused on winning, I guess, at all costs. You have some people who tend to solve this problem by trying to recruit and all that kind of thing. But I just think that's human instincts. So why am I saying all of that? Well, I'm saying if you put a gun to my head and said gun to my head and said I had to articulate what I believe is the number one problem in youth sports, I've kind of gone on record to say the number one problem is our kids are not technical enough to meet the demands of the modern game. And that's how I felt, and I still kind of feel that way, but that's definitely how I felt when my older son was much younger because I was just in shock at what I was seeing. But I'm maturing a little bit, so I'm going to update that to say, well, if you had to ask me what is the number one problem in youth soccer, then I'm going to say you cannot easily scale the development process that I've laid out within the environment that's necessary over the amount of time that's necessary with the continuity that's necessary at scale, or I should say at the scale of of the amount of players that's playing youth soccer without some kind of massive investment and standardization. So let me try to say that again. I'm just kind of free thinking off the top of my head. But if you were to say to Neil, what's the number one problem? He's like, well, you cannot easily scale the development process that I've laid out within the environment that's necessary, with the continuity that's necessary, with the time frame that's necessary, without some monumental investment and a huge amount of standardization. And then a cousin to that one would be because everyone, in some respects, because everyone's heart is in the right place, and because of a lot of other factors, no one seems to see it. They don't. So they blame the clubs, people, especially pa our parents, they blame the clubs a lot of times for not, quote unquote, focusing on what they consider to be focusing on development, where the clubs are trying to manage all of these various parent personalities, all of these player personalities and profiles and levels of commitment. And trying to do that in a way that still keeps the game fun, still keeps it accessible, make sure that kids want to come to practice and develop players. And people, in my opinion, maybe I'm getting this impression, are expecting development in the way that an academy develops players. And they may not say use the word academy because that speaks to a higher level, but they want some kind of elite development, right? And I just don't think you can provide elite anything at that kind of scale without, and I don't even think this is possible, but maybe if you just standardized every single component of everything and you had a huge investment. So again, you cannot provide elite development at scale. And that scale would need require the right environments, a degree of continuity, so that coach would have to be in that program a long time, those kids a long time, and commitment levels and all that kind of stuff. So it would almost be like trying to expect a public school to produce in the way that a small, not only a small private school, but a small private school that's getting its funding from a major corporation. I just don't think it's necessarily, and by the way, that small private school gets its funding from a major corporation and recruits based on merit. I just don't think that's possible. So, not to be doom and gloom, because I actually think the news is good in the sense that what clubs can do and what they seem able to do is offer a base level of soccer education in an environment that's super fun for kids, right? That's what I expect from my youth soccer club, a basic level of soccer education with and my son to have a lot of fun. And I can say hands down, my younger one loves his club. He loves his teammates. He loves all the games. He loves the travel parts of it. He wants to come to practice early. He wants to stay late. He loves the coaches. He loves everything, and he's learning a little bit. And that's pretty much what I am resolved with. And so now, speaking directly to my parent trainers, and you're going to understand that if I want them to get more out of this game than a basic level of soccer education and fun, then I got a DIY and get other resources, could be private trainers, could be whatever, to supplement, not even supplement, that's not even the right word, because I actually got to do a podcast on supplement, but to fill in the gaps that they're missing at the club environment. My standards have to be higher than the club environment. What we do has to be, in some respects, more intense than the club environment. I got to supplement a lot of free play. I got to bring in a lot of free play. I got to do all this other stuff. This other stuff that you're just not going to get at the team environment. And then, oh, by the way, even if you were in the perfect development environment, the team environment can only take you so far. Now, there are exceptions to this, what I just said. My older son's club is an exception in the sense that they're tiny, have a mission-driven founder who created the club, is the director, coaches the teams. My son has been there since he's eight, and they got a very focused thing that they do. And because they're so predictable in what they do, I'm able to fill in the gaps. And you have some exceptions. And if you find that, more power to you. But when we have this national conversation, I just think, I don't even know if this is helpful, but I don't think the number one problem is coaches out there, competent coaches are out there trying to win over development. I think the problem is, again, you cannot offer an elite service to millions of people. It just don't work that way. What you can offer is a great service to millions of people, and then the ones who want to take it to another level, will add in, will do the other stuff that's necessary to do so. I hope this is helpful. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. I'd love to hear your opinion, and let's get better together.